When does life begin to make sense? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. When does life begin to make sense? Well, life begins to make sense when we are honest with ourselves. Now, everyone that I'm looking at here in this vast audience is dishonest. Every one of you are dishonest. You tell me that you're God, which is quite a big statement. But when I look at you and see how you act, I think, is that how God acts?
Oh, God.
And all of you tell me that you're whole and perfect. And then you go around telling me about your unholiness, and that's the correct word, your unholiness. All of you tell me that you are the master creator of your world and everything in your world you have created, and then you tell me right to my face, and that there are some people in your world that are not very nice. You tell me there are some people in your world who are evil, bad, who are creating wars, who are ugly, who are hateful. And you said, you created them? Now, you see, we have to learn to be consistent. One of the terrible things about God is that God is consistent. God is not one day a happy God and the other day a sad God. Now you say, but God is all. Yes, God is all, neither happy nor sad. God does not view itself as happy or sad, as sick or well. Now, the image, I believe, that God, as me, likes to play is an abundant image. I like to play an independently wealthy God. Doesn't that sound good to you?
Yeah.
I like to play a whole God, you know, the wholeness of perfect health and perfect right relationships. I like to play a God, a good creator. I don't make no junk, you know. I created everything beautiful because I create everything the way I want it to be. Now, I create everything, if I'm God and the absolute of absolute. But just for now, let's play with our realm of God. Now, our realm of God is not the absolute realm. Because if we were in the absolute realm, we would not be in the relative realm. And then you wouldn't be thinking relative thoughts. There'd be no relative world for you. So, but you want to be in the relative world. So just admit it. You want to be a human being. You want to be a divine human being. You want to be a great human being, a beautiful human being. And that's good. But now, what kind of a human world are you creating yourself in? What kind of a human world am I creating myself in? Am I creating myself in a happy human world? In a human world that's just filled with joy and peace and harmony and goodness and right action and truth and wholeness and everything good? Am I creating myself like that? Or am I creating myself with one little smidgen of unhappiness? One little smidgen of looking at another person and judging them? You know? You see, I am the kind of God who is the God of the, I'm not the UC God, you know, unconditional loving God. And I look at everybody in my creation and I say, good and very good. I look at every circumstance and every situation and every person and every place and everything, every animal, every creature is good and very good. We saw David Copperfield the other night, and David Copperfield had this great big black scorpion there, and it was crawling around. And then he told this girl to take her hand and reach in the box and take it out. Well, the girl was a little dubious, as anybody would be. But if David Copperfield, and of course he wanted her to be that way, because it made it look a little more, you know, scary. But finally, David Copperfield reaches in, and he grabs the tail, which is a terrible thing, and he picks it up by the tail. Well, no problem. And with one of his claws, the scorpion picked up a card, which was the card he wanted the scorpion to pick up from the deck. He had the cards all fanned out in his hand, and lowered the scorpion to it, and the scorpion took the card, which was the card he wanted him to take. Now, was this scorpion a mechanical robot scorpion?
No.
Was it a non-real scorpion? What's that deal all about, you know? Well, David Copperfield is his own illusionist. He creates all the illusions that he wants. Now, you say, well, illusion, wasn't it real? Well, hey, I'm going to tell you right now. Look it up in the dictionary, and you'll find that the word illusion means everything. Illusion means the appearance of things, the reality of things, the lack of reality of things, the whatever. Now, it was just an illusion that the car hit the tree. But in your mind, your creation had the car hit the tree and get all messed up. In my mind, the car stopped at the tree, and as people could say, it hit it, but it just stopped. We walk over there, and it's about 3 or 4 inches from the tree, and 3 or 4 inches this side of the tree, and it went right by it. It didn't touch it at all. Well, now, who's going to make these illusions for themselves? And are these illusions, is it real that the car hit the tree, as far as you're concerned? Yes. Is it real the car didn't hit the tree, as far as you're concerned? Yes. How can you have dual illusions of the same experience of being quite different? Well, this is what life is all about. What kind of a God are you? What kind of a creator are you? When you think of God, when you think of God that the philosophers speak of, or Jesus speaks of, or Buddha speaks of, or whomever speaks of, what kind of God are you thinking about? Are you thinking of the absolute God wherein there is neither right nor wrong, nor good nor evil? No? Or are you thinking of a God that creates something with judgment about him? Well, the Old Testament is full of judgment. The Old Testament, God of hell and damnation, and sending people to hell, you know, and sending people to purgatory, and saying, well, these are things we do to ourselves. We created these things ourselves. Now, what if there wasn't a Dante who didn't create purgatory, you know? Dante didn't create it, he merely wrote about it. Oh, he wrote about what was on people's minds. He wrote about the story the church taught. You better behave, and don't be a sinner, because if you do, you're gone, you know? Well, now, why are people being told these stories? Well, the priests, if they didn't have a congregation, wouldn't have a job. And they'd have to do something else. And so part of their job is to teach whatever the church teaches. Now, what kind of church do you want to belong to? You want to belong to a church that teaches hell and damnation? Or you want to belong to a church that teaches the love of the universal presence, the unconditional love of God? There are churches like either one. You can have it. Or do you want to be that church, that unconditional loving church? Do you want to be that absolute philosopher who lives in the presence of wholeness and good? Do you want to be the philosopher who looks at the car hitting the tree and seeing it not hit the tree? You know? Just driving right by. Other people might think it hit it, but it didn't. What kind of philosopher do you want to be? Do you want to be the philosopher who sees everything good and very good? Do you want to be God that sees everything in its harmony and beauty and goodness? But God doesn't see things that way. The absolute God, the relative God, does. Because in the relative, there is good and bad. But in the absolute, there is no good and bad. And you want to play the game of the relative. You want to play the game of the human being. And that's not bad. But do you want to play the game of a human being in the king's treasure chest? Or do you want to play it in the pauperness, in the lack? Do you want to live in India, where I believe they said something, there are more billionaires in India than anywhere else on earth, isn't that something? And yet India has more poor people, abject poor people, than anywhere else on earth. How interesting. Now, how can the same country breed both? It's all mental. It's all mental. And in the United States, are there people in abject poverty at all? True? Sure. Do they have to be? No. The people in the United States who don't have enough to eat, they can go to the government and the government will give them money. There are people in the United States who don't have a house to live in, they go to the government gives them a house to live in. And there are people who like to call themselves SP, street people. And they like to push their little cart that they steal from the supermarket around town, loaded with whatever their street people things are. And you know what they do? They're fat. They're not skinny people. They walk down behind the supermarkets and they take the food that's thrown out that's getting rotten and they peel off the rot and they go down to where there's still some good there and they have enough to eat for forever. Or they go to the Salvation Army or they go wherever. But the thing is, nobody needs to have abject poverty anywhere in the world. Nowhere. But we do by choice. We do by choice. And nobody has to be a street person. That person's enjoying being a street person.
Oh, yeah.
You look at those men and you look at those women who are pushing those carts and you think to yourself, gee, what a terrible way to live. They feel there's no responsibility. But you know what? They're kidding themselves. Those people have to get up in the morning, because if they don't, the police will shoo them out wherever they're sleeping, unless they're sleeping in the park. I mean, in the wherever. But the thing is, they have to get up in the morning because they wake up. They have to go looking for food because they're hungry. They have to look for a place to go potty because they have to go potty. They have to find something that's going to give them clothing to wear or give them a blanket to cover them at night or whatever, you know. They have to do those things or else freeze to death. And some freeze to death, but not many. Not many. The street people are just as much subject to the have-tos of the other people, of the people who work from 8 to 5, you know. And it's interesting, but this is our creation. Now, did you ever think that a street person has responsibilities? Well, he does. Did you ever think you have responsibilities? You do. Now, if you have responsibility of being a divine human being, that's one thing. If you have responsibility of being an ordinary human being, it's another thing. If you have a responsibility of being a street person, none of those are good, none of those are bad. But if you have given yourself the responsibility of being a divine human being, and you live in unconditional love, yeah, not bad. You live in peace and harmony, and everywhere you look and see beautiful things. And you hold out your hands and say, what a wonderful day, Lord. And then you look, your hands are stuffed with money. You say, how did that happen? Cool, huh? Yeah. Everything you do turns out to be opulent and beautiful. Really?
I didn't put it in my head.
Really? Now, why not?
Yes.
Ellen?
Yeah?
Have you ever heard of the MT? Now, that's not E-M-P-T-Y. That's M-T. It's called a money tree.
Okay.
And money grows on trees.
Okay.
At least that's what people like to play.
Uh-huh.
And they give their friends a gift, and each ties to the tree some denomination of money, and nobody knows who gave what. But the tree is just loaded with dollars or tens or twenties or whatever, you know. Lovely, lovely. But that's the money tree. What is that a symbol of? Sylvia!
Abundance.
Thank you! My God, I knew she knew it. See, it's a symbol of abundance. Is that right, Ingeborg? I can't tell. See your
yes.
Head shaking on my recorder here.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's another thing. Okay. Abundance. Now, what is that abundance? Nice stuff, huh? Now, what does the Pope do? The Pope, no, no, no. Ellen raises her hands, palm up. The Pope's not a palm upper. He's not saying, give me, God, give me.
Palm down.
He's got palms down. He says, my love is spread across all of you people, you know. I give you my love. Now, his cardinals have their palms up saying, give me your money. Give the church your money. But the Pope, he spends it, you know. And everybody should be a Pope, you know. Spend it lavishly. Have your own jet airplane like the Pope. Have your own entourage like the Pope. Uh-huh. Have people wanting to shoot you like the Pope. Now, why does the Pope have people wanting to shoot him? And there's only one reason the Pope has people wanting to shoot him, and that's because the Pope is sticking his big, 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 what country does he come, Polish nose, in the business of other people.
He's German nose now.
Well, German, that's right, German now. That's right, the Polish Pope died. Okay, that was Paul. Mm. Yeah, okay, now, what's he doing? He is telling other people in the world how they should live. He is not being a living example of how to do it. Now, he's a good example, basically. But Pope John was one that shot. And they shot him because he was having meetings on world peace and telling countries what to do. And you don't do that. Now, what do you do?
Live it.
Live it.
You are peace.
Now, why did they take Jesus and string him up? Because they thought Jesus had his nose in their business. He wanted to be the king of the Jews. That's what they thought. Now, they didn't like that. Now, if he was just an itinerant preacher, you know, just an itinerant Messiah, that was okay. But to stick his nose in their business, they didn't like that. Now, he didn't say that. But he didn't stop people from thinking it. He didn't say that he wasn't the master, but he didn't stop people from saying he was. And you see, when you go around having people call you King of the Jews, you know, what people are saying is they want you to take over their problems. And then there are going to be people like Sylvia who says, I can do it myself. Get your nose out of my business. I want to do it myself, right?
Right.
And so, you see, And then when the Pope persists in telling Sylvia how to run her life, Sylvia says, look, Dad, you're a fine man. You got a lot going for you. But I'm not one of your followers, so please get off my back. Don't tell me how to run my peaceful or my unhappy world. Don't tell me, you know. When a mother says to her son, son, I am so proud of you. You are so wonderful. You always do everything right. But Mom, I've been doing, son, all I know about it is what you do right, what you're doing good, you're fantastic. And the kid will end up, very quickly, doing everything the mother could have ever dreamed of the kid doing. And when the Pope gets up there and says, nations should stop fighting each other and things like that, people are going to piss on him. Uh-huh. They're going to say, no way, old man, get off my back. But if the Pope gets up there and he says, there now is peace on earth, and it began with the Catholic Church. it began with me. And cool, you know. There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. And I see peace everywhere. And so he sees it. And so it is. And so the people love him. And so the people of every nation of the world, Catholic or otherwise, they look at the Pope and they say, he's one of our people. He's our kind of guy, you know. But if they hear him say, their country is wrong for fighting, or their country is wrong for fighting, or they shouldn't fight, or they shouldn't do this, or they, you know, they say, well, stick it up your nose. You don't tell us what to do like that. You're not our daddy. And our daddy doesn't even do that. Our daddy is taught by Herb Bierley, and our daddy has learned to say, son, I'm proud of you. Daughter, when you go out with your boyfriends, you go out and you respect your body, and you maintain your body as a temple of the living God, and when you're ready to have children, then you begin to have sex, and you begin to have... You don't need to have sex to have a nice relationship. You don't need to have sex to enjoy each other, to really cool into each other, because it's the foreplay and the afterplay of sex that means the most anyhow. But the thing is, you don't need that. And by you having no desire for it until you choose to procreate or until you choose to have it as part of your family life, then that's great, you know? But many people are going, terrible. No, it's true. Do you know, we just read 30 million, more than that must be. But anyhow,
30 million.
Some 30 million. There are more in the generation that has just come through in China. The boys and girls, the boys outnumber the girls, and the girls are maybe, would say, 42%, and the boys are like 56% or 58%. And the boys are not interested in getting married because they don't want to be tied down. And the girls are now able to go and have a job and earn money and have individuality. They don't need to depend on a man. And having kids was really not what they wanted to do, because then they were tied to home and tied to this and tied to that. And out of that generation, the girls are not going to be available to the 48% of boys, to the 42% girls, or whatever it comes up to. And there's not enough to go around. And the girls are not going to do that. Oh, they might have sex or something like that, but the thing is, they don't want children, because they don't want to lose their job. They don't want to not lose their, they don't want to lose their freedom of being able to go to work and being able to maintain themselves and have their world. Now, you see, the Chinese nation has created this for themselves. Now, I'm saying one more thing by what I'm saying. Can anybody tell me what it is?
Because seven have fun.
I'm saying that the Chinese Republic is not going to keep maintaining its population if the people don't have kids. You understand?
No.
And if the generation that they kept, and you could only have two children, you know, and as it is now, the I don't know what the rule is about children, but you can only have one dog, 14 inches high, in the household in China, in Beijing at least, you know. Now, isn't that interesting? Now, you see, when you have rules like that, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Come, Schnell.
To follow it.
No.
Just to
They're going to have as many dogs as they can get away with.
Sorry.
And they're going to have the dog 14 and a quarter inches, 14 and a half, or maybe more, and hide him. They're, when the government says, no, you cannot do something, they're going to want to do it. When the government comes out and says, now, let's be a nation of the most beautiful dogs in the world. Let's breed our dogs all to be 14 inches high. And hey, no.
Yes.
This is going to be, and let's have them be so wonderful. So, not you have to. But wouldn't it be wonderful to do that, they would say. And the people would say, interesting. Yeah. Uh-huh. Do you think people like, do you think China likes its opulence? What did they say in the article in the National Geographic? They said that the millionaires, the many, many millionaires in China do not mind the pollution, even if they have to die in the process, as long as they're making money. Because they were dying in reasonably good air, not making money. Why not live making money, you know, if you have to have a little pollution? And they'll work out their pollution thing. They'll work it out. But, you see, you're God. What kind of a God are you? Now, Ellen, what do you see when you look at China?
Wealth, abundance, happiness, joy, eternal life.
When you look at China, you look at a nation of balanced, harmonious people living in I'm talking about pollution. Living in
pure
environment.
Yeah.
Living in a pure environment. And you see, I look at China living in a pure environment. China is just like a bowl of perfume. It's just got a little heavy for a minute now. And pretty soon the fragrance is starting to flow all over the place. And all of the pollution is poof, poof, poof. And the need for the pollution is gone. They're going to find, Devlin, they're going to find that by using X, Y, Z plus Q for their source of energy, and there's no pollution. They're going to, with their brilliant genius minds, come up with something. It's going to be so inexpensive to use that, and it can be used in the present factories and what have you that they got, and they won't need to have any pollutants going into the air anymore. Isn't that exciting? Mm-hmm. And everywhere, people will be planting trees, and they'll be having water gardens, and people will be doing things, and they'll be spreading out across the vastness of China. As here in the United States, Ellen, have you ever driven across the United States?
Mm-hmm.
What did you see? Land and land and land and land and land. Billions of acres of land across the United States. Not being used. Not that it's good, sure, but I mean, it's available. You don't have to have this concentration. You can see people enjoying that. And that's the beauty of it. So, what kind of God are you? What kind of creator are you? What kind of world are you in as an absolute philosopher? Are you in the Pope's world with your palms down, sending your blessings to the people? Or do you have your palms up like the cardinal saying, we got to pay for the Pope's ideas? No. No, even the cardinals are learning to do what the Pope does. Just give, give, give blessings, give blessings. Wonderful.
Yes.
Think on these things. But not only think on these things, live these things. And you watch. You watch. The instant you start living it, and it can be right now, boom, right now. The instant you start living it, you have nowhere in your heart, no room in your heart for judgment ever again. You are unconditional love, 100%. Now and forevermore. I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.